welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Acclaimed author Da Chen's My Last Empress is a mystical and poetic story of romance and palace intrigue set in 19th century China. Chen's debut novel, Brothers, set during the Chinese Cultural Revolution, received tremendous praise for its insight into the period. In My Last Empress, Chen once again grounds his tale in a keen portrayal of place and period, this time inspired by his encounter with a statue of the first Yale graduate to be beheaded in China's Boxer Rebellions in 1896, to set his story in 19th century imperial China. It is a great pleasure to welcome Da Chen to The Book Show.
Thank you, Joe.
This novel, My Last Empress, I think is beautiful. It's receiving wonderful reviews, and justifiably so. It's gorgeous. What brought you to this particular time in China's history?
It was more of the character that brought me here. I was visiting Yale, as you mentioned, and I saw this very statue of a very somber man who was beheaded and had such a great connection with China. He was such a courageous man. He actually could have run away. The Chinese Boxer rebels were moving up north as they went along, trying to kill the foreign missionaries. And he could have run away, but he stayed longer to save another fellow missionary. And suddenly, when I was, the idea of a novel sometimes come from a very simple act of elegance or nobility. And I was looking at him, and I began to feel very strange looking at his head. You know, this is the man whose head was cut off. And suddenly, I got all the moods, all the tonality, all the drive, motivation, and inspiration, aspirations all came together for this character. And all I need to do for the rest of the time was simple, just create a conceivable physical story and a stage for him to perform his heroic act in an act of loving.
Tell us a little bit about the narrator, Samuel Pickens, of recounting the tragedy of his lost love.
The difficulty came when I realized that I actually could not write a novel about a missionary's life. I don't know enough about the business of religion. But I do know quite a bit about love, man's love for beautiful women, for their girlfriends, for their wives. You know, I love my wife, you know, and I understand that that could be another reason for one to make a lot of sacrifices. And so I create this love story for him to act upon as a measurement of his bravery and dedication. Therefore comes this butterfly of a lover who came into his life and very quickly vanished. When you create a very powerful protagonist and then you take away the things he wants, he only wants it more. Hence, the story begins. And he goes all the way to China to look for the reincarnation of his lost love.
I'm hoping you will read a little bit from the book and perhaps read from the prologue, which sets it up so beautifully. And this is from My Last Empress, which is the new novel by Da Chen.
I'm old, decayed, and fermented. I'm a dead tree with a rotten cavity within which grows a stem of flower, my last empress. Sitting on the veranda, I feel my bones aching and my heart ready to dip down the horizon like the aging sun. I'm alone now with Ying Ying, the palace servant, from my days tutoring the last emperor. He is as faithful as the thoughts of my Annabelle. Age makes simple all urges. Only the essence of life remains. The rest matters not at all. Daily, I rise to do one small task. Write down what transpired. From that initial spark to the final flame, patching pebbles of my past into the riverbed of the present. For what reason, you may ask? The answer is simple. So you will know that I have not lived a fruitless life, but an immortal one. I relive on paper the bygone days savoring the glory, the same way a shadow vies for the sun. This is a story of love and inevitability. I was nothing until Annabelle came along one fateful summer day. Your ink is ready, master, In calls in his soft voice, placing the ink well before me. Ink gleams like the encroaching night. Carefully, I dip the tip of my brush at the edge of the well, then let the brush glide over the porous scroll. From my trembling hand bleeds forth the passion that I thought had died all those years ago. Yet still, I am forever burning, forever wanting.
Da Chen reading the prologue of his new novel, My Last Empress. We hear those words about the tip of the pen going into the ink. And can a comparison be made to that process and the writing of this novel?
Indeed. When I was very young, my grandfather, who was a poet, taught me how to do calligraphy, his hand over mine. And that's why nowadays I sign my books with his calligraphy. The book came together as a result of me crafting this book one word at a time, as if I were writing poetry with Chinese black ink on a porous scroll. For a period book, historical fiction, the most important thing is really diction. Diction is like a voice. So a writer should have use diction to oil the prose style. And the prose style in this book became almost the most important element because it dictates where the setting will be and it brings us back to the space between the wall and wallpaper within the Forbidden City in China.
So many conversations with writers, we talk about the wordplay, the crafting of a sentence and allowing that to be manipulated until it is what the author wants it to be. So for you, in using words like ink and parchment and stitching that are so permanent, it's as if you're casting it in stone.
Exactly. The less you say, the more its meaning. Even though prose seems like some sort of butterfly, it's motile in some ways. You just said it. It's exactly, we should carry these words with such a gratitude and use them very barrenly so that they resonate more deeply. And I always say that people, I don't know other writers who can crank out thousands and thousands of words a day, which is great. But to me, a book is built word by word. That has to do with the fact, the way I create a book. I create a story. I always say that a writer is not the morning sun. We are not. But we are that pearl of a dew, morning dew, that reflects the morning sun. So you are very little, but can you use that little pearl of a dew resting on a leaf to reflect? If you look carefully into the morning dew, it really captures the entire morning sun in its own little globe. And that's what we do as a writer or as a poet.
When we talk about you writing, that really there's so much that goes into it before that, that it's actually thinking before the writing. I mean, that's the real work, I would assume.
I feel like each time I write a book, I dive into a very deep river and I swim blindly. And there's a phrase in Chinese, it actually says, 一气呵成. If you want to write something, an essay or a composition, a poem, a book, you try to hold your breath as if you are swimming under the water until its completion. Do not come up until it's done. And you immerse yourself in such a way and looking for the nutrients like a little fish in the river, we call a pregnant river in the springtime. At the end, at the completion, you come up and take your biggest breath, but you come up with something in between your teeth, a big fish. And that big fish is the reason for this book to exist. What does this book tell people? What is the wisdom of this book? What is the truth that you want to impart? And sometimes you come up with a big fish, but sometimes you don't even need to come up with such a big fish. A little shrimp will do, as long as a character is changed through the transformation that you're swimming. Therefore, you're swimming under the water, holding your breath until your lungs explode. It's worth the while.
In talking about size and just taking that a step further, I did notice and made a note of it while reading the novel that having read and so enjoyed your previous work, you look at a novel like Brothers that is larger in size, that is larger in number of words, and yet this novel, while smaller and has less pages, is still as vivid, is still as broad and deep. There's a scope to it. Does that come through a comfort you have developed in writing and in developing a style, or is that dictated solely by the story itself?
Great point. Brothers actually could have been bigger, but my editor at Random House cut it about 100,000 words. But that was the attempt of a new writer coming onto the scene, and you are rambunctious like a puppy, and I was slobbering all over the pages and saying a lot of things. But then through the process of learning, becoming a novelist, I realized that, wow, the more important thing is what is unsaid rather than what is said. And brevity comes with the wisdom I gain as I age into my 40s. And suddenly having too many pages about a simple theme or simple scene, it's not as important. If you tell a story with one word, why do you want to do it with two words? And suddenly the rarity is the fact that we could do more with less.
Even in your answers to my questions, there is a dreamlike quality when you describe things, and that comes through very much in the book, of this dreamlike language about love and nostalgia and how ethereal things are.
Oh, you just mentioned my favorite word, nostalgia.
Let's talk about nostalgia. Does nostalgia get us in trouble in the sense of romanticizing something that perhaps was not as good?
Well, nostalgia comes to only in those who possess a poetic mind. You don't need to be a poet to possess a poetic mind. For example, the shirt you are wearing today, I'm looking at it and I say, wow, you have a poetic mind because you set at great color to this very existence. You talk about dream. You was mentioning this word dream. And dream is a very important word in fiction writing. Each time we write a book, each time we tell a story, you are creating a dream for your reader. And you do your very best trying to not break that dream. Even when I'm writing, I was dream making. I was making novel. A novel is life, comma, distorted. A character is a human being disoriented. In order to make a work, a novel, you have to give them the complete dream. Sometimes you watch a movie and in the middle of the movie you say, oh, I'm done. This movie does something that I can't continue watching. That's because the movie maker breaks the dream. By having something said that is so irrelevant, that doesn't belong in this movie. I love reading, but I have test about reading. If I can hold this book to my pillow and read on, helping me make a dream before I go to sleep, then this book passed the test. But sometimes, there are books I read in the middle and I say, ooh, I can't continue. Mm. It's when the dream is broken.
But the interesting thing about dreams is sometimes they're beautiful, mm-hmm. sometimes they're nightmares.
Correct.
And
well, part of the dream has a nightmarish quality to it.
Right.
Yes.
And then there's also the dreams that so many of us have that just don't make sense. So is that because we're not open to it, that they don't make sense to us at that time or that moment, or because they are not fully formed?
A dream is actually also a reality. A dream is actually reality in poetic terms and subjectified all at the same time. So an author's dream sometimes might not be the reader's dream. And sometimes these two notions come together. They are at all with each other. So that's when, you know, you get up from the theater and say, you know, I'm done, you know. But you are more agreeable to great movie makers like Steven Spielberg's movie. All the movie that he makes is such a complete egg of a dream. From Schindler's List down to E.T. and then back again to Catch Me If You Can. These are such a varied subjects, but each time is a dream, is a complete whole dream that you follow these characters all the way to the end.
In describing your test about a book, being able to, and it's a lovely image of thinking of you with it near the pillow and how it leaves you for your state of rest, does that apply to your own work as well, in the sense of the old term of I'm going to sleep on it? So that dreamlike state that you are even able to create and think about these characters and about their involvement with one another in sleep, in a dream.
I do live with these characters from inception all the way to completion and after that as well. So they are a part of my dream. In fact, every night I go to sleep thinking about the depth and the riches of these characters. Every morning, I can't wait to get up because I want to jump into the novel writing again to execute the dream that I dreamed about the previous night. I begin to live with these characters so much and so long. For this book, it's about 10 years, you know. And each time I talk about Pickens, there's that mood that hangs over my existence. And I was interviewing with someone else yesterday, and they said that now that you're in California, do you think you can write this book while living in California? I say it is not possible because it is the beauty of Hudson Valley. And there was that settled, that kind of moody spirit that the valley, the entire valley has. The valley is very beautiful, even in the winter time, in a gaunt beauty, you know. It's very modest, even though it's grand. Hudson Valley, the river as well. It was that kind of a very possessive quality and opaqueness, misty and foggy, you know, that prevails over this book and over the period of time when I was writing this book. In California, it would be very hard to write this book because it's so sunny there and so everybody's so healthy, you know.
Even though you're writing, in some cases, about China.
Right.
It makes a difference, East Coast versus West Coast.
I think so. Writing a book is all about creating a mood. And Hudson Valley is very inducive in creating a poetic mood. I mean, every day it changes magic colors, especially this season. My goodness, every day I cross the bridge, seeing the Hudson Valley red leaves, I was just like, my heart gladdened. Literally. And you're grateful that Cynic Hudson has bought so many patches of trees to be preserved exactly that way. And I think that is really God's most beautiful creation, these painterly red leaves of autumn. I could write so many poetry about it, but I'm not a poet. I only have poetic mind, though.
Is that something that you would like to do or have tried and feel that you're not?
Well, I think for me, I actually feel that it's better to be thought that you could write poetry rather than you stand out onto the stage and say, you know, I am a poet. But I do have a poetic mind. And what does that mean? What it means is for each individual, if you appreciate this particular day more than other people do, then you are more poetic than the other person. Poetic is, it's giving meaning to things that is old. We take for granted so many things. But when you begin to give the resonant meaning to the things that are attached to, then you become a poet of life.
In this book, as you say, it took you 10 years. Does that feel right? Is that a comfortable process? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you have an editor and a publisher and a public who is there saying, we want more sooner, we want more sooner. But for you, is that comfortable?
No, I'm not productive enough. That's, but I have done other things in between that. This book was very difficult to write because for the first time, as you said, you were comparing this book with Brothers, my first novel. And this book came from inside. I saw the image, and now I have to let it grow from inside out. And Brothers and my memoirs, they came from somewhat outside because I had to sort of live through some of those experiences. All I need to do is to take the fruits from all those experiences, which are trees, and then put it on the pages. But this book, I literally have to create because it's something very unusual, something very intangible. And therefore, I have to go very deep to create that. And for a writer, the way to create that is by stitching each word together. And that leads eventually to the place where the sun finally sets.
It's a beautiful image of that sun setting. So there is a point when you know that it's the way that you want it.
It actually came at the very end of a book when Mr. Pickens and the Empress, after spending 3 days on a boat running away from the Forbidden City, and then this Empress, who used to follow him around, suddenly she stood up, even though her hair was a little disheveled. Pickens, the character, was admiring her from the back. He thinks, suddenly Qiu Rong, this empress, became a fuller woman, more beautiful one. And suddenly the opaqueness was erased from the landscape. And I begin to see the sun. I begin to see the wide open stretches of rice fields. And that was a moment actually less for her coming out, becoming a fuller woman, fuller character, reaching its all her potentials. And it was more for me coming out under the oppressive spell, toiling away to get this book done, get to the end of the story. I always saw the end, but it was the in-between that is a writer's process. John Irving always said that he always knows the beginning and the ending. And then a writer's job is to create the between. And the between is really the hardest because writing a novel is like playing a chess game because everything has to make sense and you have to think several steps ahead of me to make things. Everything has to make sense because it is a heaving living being, and heaving living being do have a set of lungs, a heart, kidneys, and a brain, and beautiful or ugly appearance. So we have to make that reality a reality so that it would live on in the imagination of all our readers. If that's not the case, then the character and the book will die.
Da Chen's latest novel is My Last Empress. It is published by Crown. Da, it's always a great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Joe. You are the most amazing.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.